Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hot Spots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello. Thank you for joining me. I'm Kay Brown, host of Hotspots, where we'll be unpacking the unfolding political debacle that just keeps getting more alarming as our country slides into authoritarianism and theocracy. We're broadcasting today from our spectacular desert location in Riverside County, California, one of the world's truly great hotspots. My guest is Heidi Byrick, co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you so much for having me, Kay.
I'm really appreciative that you're here. Your group recently published a report on Christian nationalism, which notes that it has evolved into a powerful political movement aiming to reshape the United States into a Christian theocracy. Fueled by apocalyptic beliefs and authoritarian goals, its leaders seek to embed a narrow religious doctrine into our law and government, threatening religious freedom and democratic principles. Backed by influential figures and well-funded networks, this movement is blurring the lines between faith and political extremism. Heidi, tell me about the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. Why did you start this group, and what are you trying to accomplish?
So myself and another colleague, Wendy Vi, both of us had worked at the Southern Poverty Law Center pushing back against far-right extremism for a long time. We founded the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism in 2020 because we didn't think there was enough emphasis on transnational extremist movements, on the export of hate and extremism from the United States into other places. And though there were good organizations doing work here domestically, including my former employer, there are a lot of parts of the world where far-right movements were growing and nobody was documenting them. They weren't even seen. So the purpose of the Global Project was to take that on, to document far-right movements around the world, how they interact with Americans, and come up with strategies to push back.
Where in the world are these movements developing?
Oh my gosh, it's pretty much all over the Western world now. So nearly every European country has a strong far-right movement. In some countries, they're in charge. I'll point out Hungary and Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who is an inspiration to Trump, who has literally changed that country into what the European Union Parliament calls an electoral autocracy. We have had similar movements in Brazil, which was actually pushed back against in their recent elections. You have Narendra Modi in India, Erdogan in Turkey. So this is a worldwide problem. Far-right movements gaining power, getting into governments, and then doing what the far-right does, which is restricting the rights of various marginalized communities.
Your report, called Faith as a Weapon, gives a comprehensive picture of Christian nationalism and outlines a lot of the key figures in the movement in the United States. Can you highlight who some of those folks are and what they're up to?
Sure. Well, first, let me say just a little bit about what Christian nationalism is, right? This is a political movement. It's not a religious movement. When we talk about Christian nationalists, we're not talking about all Christians. I just want to make that absolutely clear. This political movement does not believe in the ideals of the United States, things like separation of church and state, for example. What they believe is that biblical law should rule. So ultimately, if Christian nationalists were to take over the country, we would no longer have the Constitution that we have right now. We would be ruled by a particular far-right version of Christianity. And this is evidenced by the fact that Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has said, where do you get your ideas, your inspirations, etc.? He says the Bible. He doesn't say the Constitution. So we need to understand that. We also need to understand that about 10% of Americans are hardcore Christian nationalists, and another 20% believe in some of their ideas. So they're a minority. That's important to know. They don't represent faith communities writ large. Some prominent figures, I already mentioned Mike Johnson, Pete Hegseth of the Department of Defense, right? The head of the Pentagon, our Secretary of Defense.
Now the Department of War.
Yes, that is correct. I forgot. Pete Hegseth is a member of a church run by a pastor named Doug Wilson. This particular congregation was started in Moscow, Idaho. Doug Wilson does not believe women should have the right to vote. He believes women should be back in the home. He does not believe in gay rights in any sense of the word. He's a really extreme figure. He even wrote a book defending Southern slavery, saying that slavery is biblically allowed. This guy, Doug Wilson, is Pete Hegseth's pastor. Hegseth likes him so much that he moved his family to Tennessee to be near one of Wilson's churches. So that's one example. We also have Paula White, who is an evangelical extremist. She's on Trump's board to root out anti-Christian sentiment. You know, there's a witch hunt going on in the federal administration where people are encouraged to point out if their colleagues are affecting their ability to practice Christianity. She believes crazy things like there are demons among us, believes the left, as many Christian nationalists do, is run by demons that have to be expulged through spiritual warfare. So it's this warlike conversation. You know, if you're gay, you are demon obsessed and you need to be destroyed. This is the kind of thinking. So there's her. There's also the head of the education department. Linda McMahon is one of these people. In fact, most of the department heads who are in power right now are Christian nationalists in their views. So it's all across the federal administration, cabinet heads, undersecretaries, the list could go on.
And they're making a lot of progress, it seems, in rooting out diversity, equity, and inclusion, in changing the way that people access their health care, and doing whatever they can to chip away at personal rights and freedoms in the positions that they now hold in these agencies.
That's right. They came into office with a plan, this thing called Project 2025, that was written up by the Heritage Foundation. Anybody can go read it. It's online. Which talks about stripping the rights from various communities that are opposed to these Christian nationalist beliefs. Top of the list is the gay community, right? They're first because they're perceived as the enemies, unnatural beings opposed to Christianity. Then comes women's rights. So, you know, it's not just about taking away abortion. They're talking about things like no-fault divorce, no women voting, no contraception. The list could go on. Also, minority communities in various ways. You know, this crusade against DEI policies, it's not just about that. You know, literally the Trump administration is ordering, for example, that the National Park Service not talk about slavery and the history of slavery in this country. Information on that is coming down across the board. Mentions of the LGBTQ movement are gone from Stonewall, where the movement began. So they're rewriting history. They're taking away rights. They're doing other things that are punishing just in general when it comes to Medicaid, for example, right? That hits a whole lot of people. They're messing around with Social Security and experimenting other ways to do that. So it's a broadside against the kinds of things that we thought would always be here. Well, they're not.
Talk a little bit about January 6th, the insurrection, and what that symbolized, how that was a wake-up call that we really have failed to heed.
Yeah, well, let's just be clear. Regardless of the Republicans' attempts to rewrite the history of January 6th, which they've had incredible success at, unfortunately, what January 6th was Donald Trump calling people, including members of extremist groups like the white supremacist Proud Boys, militias like the Oath Keepers, to come to Washington, D.C. and overturn the election results in the 2020 election. That day, of course, was the day that the Electoral College was verifying all of its ballots. It was a key part of our constitutional process to sort of sanction the election results. And the storming of the Capitol was driven by Trump and his allies, and they were trying to stop this. I mean, it was a wholesale attack on our elected officials and a violent one, which seems to somehow have been gotten lost in the mix. You know, cops were beaten. Some died as a result of this. Our legislators were terrified and hiding. And the tragedy of it all, even with the DOJ's prosecution of these people for things like seditious conspiracy, assault, etc., Trump has let them all go, including people who are members of groups that have hugely long track records of violence. He has unleashed on the rest of us, the public, violent people. Some of them have already been rearrested for being engaged in violence.
So where do we go from here? People who care about democracy and the rule of law and maintaining our personal rights and freedoms. I get asked that a lot. Is there anything we can do?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing is get some knowledge about these things. Understand what's really happening. I worry sometimes that a lot of Americans who do care about rights and freedoms don't know what's actually happening in the country. So they can't be activated, right? They can't act. The second thing I would say is protest. Right? Make your dislike for the situation known. If that means getting involved in No Kings protests or, you know, whatever it might be, we're going to have to get out on the streets and show we don't like this. In other places where autocratic governments have been overturned, like Poland recently, it happened after mass protests and then votes, right? So voting is the key. If you don't like what's happening, you have got to get out and vote against this situation. So knowledge, protest, and voting. And I'd also say, I think local activism matters. Like in this moment when many people are afraid maybe to go on the streets, which I don't want people to be and you shouldn't be, but if you feel more comfortable, then bring these issues up. Bring it up in your church, your book club, whatever it might be. Write letters to the editor and tell your representatives you don't want this. But we've got to speak up. All of us have to speak up.
You've probably heard of the 3.5% rule or guideline that says in situations around the world where authoritarian governments have been overturned, it takes a massive amount of people. And if that percent of the folks not only are registering that they object to these things, but actually get active in nonviolent political action and protesting, pushing back, that the authoritarians have been thrown out. Does that seem like a realistic way to approach this? I mean, can we actually achieve that? Because it seems like the people in power are not paying attention and are either ignoring or worse, suppressing and actively going after people they perceive as their enemies. It's just because people say, well, you know, why are protests important? Because the people don't pay any attention to them, the people in charge.
Well, it's not true. The 3.5% rule is something that political scientists have looked at in all kinds of different places, spaces, cultures, and whatnot. You have to protest. You have to make clear that what the authoritarian is doing is not in accord with what you want to see. And it's a rule for a reason. It works. So the more we can be out on the streets peacefully saying no to what's happening, the better chance we have to reclaim those rights and freedoms and stop this authoritarian process that's occurring. Trump isn't done. These people aren't done. Project 2025 has a huge list of things they want to do. They've only done about half of them. So there is more authoritarian action coming. This is only the beginning. So if we don't get out and register our disapproval of this and the fact that we want a democracy and we want civil rights and we don't want people's freedom of speech to be crushed or freedom of religion to be crushed, we have to get out on the streets. People should remember, most Americans don't support Donald Trump. His approval ratings are down in the low 40s. That means 60% of us are not on board with what's happening. So let's get out there and show it.
It seems like some people are just recoiling and turning it all off because it's so distressing and they feel like the news is just becoming unwatchable because they just don't want to hear his voice. They don't want to hear about the latest outrage. They are hard to follow all these ins and outs of all the federal court decisions and that are in various stages of being litigated and appealed. And they're just withdrawing as a response and saying, I'm just going to go into my own little world and ignore all of this. How do we reach those people?
Yeah, well, I can understand people feeling that way. That's, of course, what all this is about, is to make you scared, to trample on people, trample on people's rights, get people fired from jobs, all these things that will make people afraid. I think the way we reach people is we have to talk about this more. We have to get out on media, on the internet, all kinds of places. And we have to remind people that the ones that are feeling that way and don't like what's happening are not the minority. You're the majority. You don't have to withdraw. Trump might be doing crazy things that obliterate people's civil rights. But understand that most Americans stand with you, not with him. That should be empowering, right? And we should be empowered by that fact. And that should help propel us to stop this process before it's gone so far that we can't.
Where can people find your report on Christian nationalism?
Sure. So our website is globalextremism.org. There's a section for reports. You can find Faith as a Weapon there. And there's a ton of information on Christian nationalism. I'd encourage people to check it out.
And you're also covering and reporting on the latest developments where things are unfolding, like in Texas.
Yes. We've written a lot about Texas and the gerrymandering because this is something Viktor Orban in Hungary did as well. Go after the courts, stack them, gerrymander. So make the system so that you can't ever win another election, right? Make it impossible to have an opposition. There's a lot of information on our website about these things domestically. I would suggest people check out our work on Project 2025 so they can be informed about what the next steps the Trump administration will take. And we write a lot about rising political violence, which is a huge problem in this country right now, ways to combat that. So I'd encourage people to get involved. We have a contact form there if you have questions. We love to speak to community groups, so write us and we will come.
Great. I really appreciate the work that you're doing. There is so much at stake. And I think as people begin to become aware of that, awareness being the first step in leading to action, and we need more massive public engagement. Millions of our fellow Americans are already with us. But we need many millions more to engage in nonviolent civil action and help make it clear this is not what we want for our country and our future.
That's right.
Well, I hope many more of us will find the motivation and summon the personal courage to speak out and show up, engage and participate. We've got to be persistent and loud and getting louder with our voices and unifying and coalescing and reinforcing and supporting each other in this movement that we're building to reverse course. And I believe it's possible. I think, and it's something we all need to be conscious of and aware of, even though it's wearing and draining and depressing, but there is hope. And I hope you'll join me again next week for Hotspots with Kay Brown on United America Network, where we're helping build a movement to reverse course. Please join us. We need you. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
You've been listening to Hotspots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hot Spots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from unitedamericanetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire, on United American Network.